Start with the five seniors tonight: John Herrod, Jamari Wheeler, Trent Buttrick, Taylor Nussbaum, Kyle McCloskey. Obviously, they've been through a lot here and a lot of success as well. What do you think they have meant to the program?
I think, you know, those are the kinds of guys that, you know, you can talk about the flashy players, the Lamar Stevens, the Tony Carrs, the guys that have come and gone over the last 10 years, but I think you really build a program or try and build a program with some of these heart and soul sorts of guys. And I think John Herrod and Jamari Wheeler have been a great example of that. Jamari, you know, has been that sort of feisty defender, and to his credit this year, he has really found his offensive game. And John Herrod, I don't think that you can say enough good things about the effort he has put forth this year in particular, but really every time that he has taken the floor. You go back all the way back to Penn State's NIT title win when Mike Watkins got hurt and John came in for the last part of that year. But I think those other guys that have not played as much, or even Trent Buttrick, who has done you know, pretty well for himself at times this year when called on. I think all of those guys, you know, you talk about locker room people, and sometimes that gets thrown in there as coach speak or something that people don't take seriously, but it is really important to have those guys as part of your program. So I think, you know, Jamari and John sort of get the headlines here, but really all five of those guys in their own way have been a big part of the success Penn State's been able to have over the last few years.
And then there's the other guys as well. Kyle McCloskey, Trent Buttrick, Taylor Nussbaum. They can't be left out of any conversation, because in a team sport, team means everybody, and these guys have made their contributions.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we hear every once in a while over the years these stories of Kyle, you know, giving guys buckets, or Trent Buttrick is certainly, you know, probably just, you know, wrong place on the wrong time in terms of the number of guys that were in front of him, but has been a constant practice presence. But you're absolutely right. You're only as good as the guys you practice against. You're only as good as the locker room that you have. And I think, you know, you can look at the starting five, you can look at the guys that come off the bench and give you meaningful minutes, but really it's those guys at the end of the bench. And I think this year of all years has been a good example of, you know, with no fans in the stands and very few family members or anybody looking, it's really been those benches that have been, you know, the energy boost at times. And certainly Penn State's has been as active as any, and that's a credit to those guys who, you know, even though maybe they don't play a whole lot, they're still invested and still a part of that team just as much as anybody.
All right, so you've looked at how this team has played. Now, Dick and I made the observation during the game Friday night, because they played Thursday, they played on the road Sunday, they played on the road Tuesday. We thought that in the first half of the game, and Jim had mentioned to us in the post-game show on Tuesday when they won, that he thought his team was tired. Did you think they looked tired Friday night?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's that time of year where you have, you know, the schedule maybe doesn't work out in a favorable way, and not to mention the fact the amount of work these guys put in away from, you know, the games themselves. I think there are those games over the course of the year where you go, man, these guys just look tired. I thought they had a few early in the year, not early in the year, but when they had some busier stretches, and then you're right, you know, the traveling, the getting up early for testing, all the things they've got to do. You know, you figured sooner or later the bill was going to come due for a game where they looked tired, and I think that was probably, you know, there's a lot of reasons why they lost, but at the end of the day, if your legs aren't in it, it's difficult to win a basketball game.
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons why. I mean, but that was, I thought, was one of them, because, look, just by luck of the draw, because personal opinion, I think the Big Ten has done a marvelous job of rescheduling games. I mean, on the fly, I think they've done a great job. And so the Nebraska game, which they won, was thrown into the mix because they were out at Iowa at the time. By luck of the draw, Purdue had a week off. And I think, you know, in some part of that game, it meant something.
Oh, for sure. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, sometimes, you know, and I agree that the Big Ten has done a good job of kind of doing all of this on the fly, like you said. But there are those moments for everybody all year where, you know, Penn State's had 4 days off and Ohio State or some other team has played, you know, basically back-to-back games or something like that. You know, so you take a team that's traveled a whole bunch, played a bunch of games, you put them up against a team that's had a week to practice, to rest. You know, those things are kind of going to go in the direction that they went in that game.
All right, here's one for you. In fast break points, Penn State's had more fast break points than the opponent this year. Believe it or not, Penn State's had more second chance points than the opponent this year. Penn State's had more points off of turnovers than the opponent this year. But points in the paint, they're down, they're like a minus 200 this year. which is not going into the season. We all knew that that was going to be an issue, Ben. So that's not this is not a surprise. But in the end, what has it meant to the record?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's sort of, it's twofold, because on the one hand, you know, we know that Penn State likes to be that sort of fast athletic team that will score those second chance points or score in transition and fast break, and that all makes sense. But you're exactly right that, you know, we knew going into the year that they were going to have some issues on, to a certain extent, on both ends of the floor in the paint, and that has sort of showed itself, for as good as John Hare has played pretty much all year in terms of effort and energy, and really to his credit, a lot of the performances he has put in. But it does go to the other side of this coin, which is, you know, at their best, Penn State shoots the ball as good as anybody. At their worst, they have an issue when it comes to answering that issue in the paint, which is, you know, if you make your threes, then that's 3 points, and they've just scored two, and now you are plus one in that particular exchange. You know, Penn State, when it shoots well, can make up for that. But in the games where it doesn't shoot as well as it would like, and there have been, you know, probably more than a few of those this year, especially from outside, you get into a situation where, you know, you have a pretty glaring weakness and you don't really have your answer for that hitting on all cylinders. So I think, you know, to Penn State's credit, we say all of this and pretty much every game has been close. So even in the games where they've shot cold, and to a certain extent that might keep them up at night later, because if they just shot a little bit better, they'd done everything else well enough. But, you know, end of the day, if you're giving up baskets in close, you know, you're not going to win a lot of games.
Ben, this will be a hard question to answer, but I just want to get your thoughts on it. Why is it the big man has such a presence in the college game? You know, Garza, Coburn, we can go through the long list in the Big Ten of really good big men, but it doesn't translate in the NBA anymore, because I mean, it hasn't really since Shaq.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, because you've even seen this year that, you know, Jokic and Joel Embiid have really been the two guys that have kind of been a sort of a renaissance of the big man. But even they, you know, they both shoot threes, they both pass it well, they both do other things. I think it's a good question. I think probably, you know, the game is just different. I think when, you know, you're in the NBA and everyone is transitioning to shooting threes, you can go and find a couple hundred of the best shooters in the world. Whereas, you know, maybe at, you know, Slippery Rock or somewhere like that, I couldn't have picked a Slippery Rock, but, you know, some school somewhere that, you know, maybe doesn't have a Steph Curry on the roster, you go, well, how can I score? And you go, well, everybody's got a big guy. You know, everybody can find someone that used to play tight end, or maybe should have played tight end, and do that. But that it is a good question, and it's definitely interesting, because, you know, I think you look at a guy like Garza, who is, you know, undoubtedly, in terms of his ability to produce, one of the best basketball players in the country. But you look at where he might go in the draft, and you look at sort of how the NBA is playing right now, and you go, you know, I'm not really sure where he fits into that equation. But certainly, you know, he's a plenty capable player, and is more big men in the NBA sort of change the game a little bit, even if there's only two or three of them. Who knows? Maybe the pendulum will swing back the other way.
15 years ago, Garza's a lottery pick now, and it's debatable as to whether he does get picked. I mean, that's what's so interesting about how much has changed in 15 years. You did a great job of reporting on the facilities, the vote, and so forth, and the money that's going to be put into Penn State football facilities. I'm sure you saw the 24/7 sports survey, and they do this every year. This is an annual thing of the top 25 facilities in college football, and this is a particular year where Penn State's not on this list. What was your opinion as to the need for the facility at Penn State, based on the renditions you've seen and also on the allocation of money for it?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, whether you like it or not, college football in particular is in an arms race where if you want to be Ohio State, you want to be Alabama, you want to be Clemson, you've got to put your money where your mouth is. The whole idea that you can just build a program off of feeling good about each other and sort of not having anything to show for it. You know, maybe in an ideal world, that's how it works out, that you just kind of, you know, win because it doesn't really matter what the player lounge looks like. But at the end of the day, all of this stuff matters in recruiting. All of it matters with perception. And, you know, I understand both sides of the argument. I do think that when you look at, you know, the financial situations that all of these athletic departments are in, and Penn State's certainly right there, coming out of the pandemic, you go, is this a good use of our funds? But I think at the same time, you know, it's a pretty easy argument to make that, you know, end of the day, Penn State football pays for itself, it pays for everything else, and it makes money. You've got to invest to make money. So I think in the long run, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how much they can transition away from some of the loans they've taken out and how much of that they can raise through philanthropy and what have you. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you want to win, if you want to be what Penn State wants to be, and they're certainly close, you're going to have to spend money. And oftentimes when you spend money on something like Penn State football, you get that return in more ways than one.
Right, and that's interesting because, I mean, it's all about timing. Now, look, a lot has been done to the Lash Building, all right? So a lot has been done, locker room, player area, and so forth. This is additional stuff that they want to put into for training room, expanded weight room, and some other items along the way. So pre-pandemic, they started getting a lot done. And this top 25, I mean, this is like all a matter of timing, Ben. I mean, the timing was a lot of these people already had spent their money on doing this when the money was flowing in the past decade. So it's a lot of it's timing.
Yeah, for sure. And I also think to a certain extent, you know, I agree with the general premise that people have that Penn State has to improve its facilities. But I also think, I mean, you've been in there probably more than I have, but certainly we've seen all the rooms in that building. And the Lash Building is not exactly a bad-looking building at this point. Like, I think there's certain a perception online that the Lash Building still has phone banks and pay phones, and you know that might have been true 10 years ago or so. But you know that building has come a long way. There's a lot of really nice things in there. We've both been in the player lounge. It's quite nice. I remember the first time that I saw it, they were trying to keep it sort of a secret because they didn't want other people to know, you know, sort of what they had in there. But, you know, any building that's got a golf simulator in it, you can say they're doing pretty well for themselves. But there's no doubt that, you know, some of this is timing. And certainly when all of these upgrades are done, you know, people are going to have a different opinion of the Lash Building as they do right now.
Ben, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. We'll see you tonight.
Yep. Thanks for having me, Steve.